It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share a common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Hey there. Welcome to the program. Let's see, who are we going to have on today? No, Larry the Cable Guy, no Jerry Seinfeld. How about, we'll come up with somebody interesting to be a guest on the show. But before we get into that, let's get into something that's real, the real deal.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
So you're the real deal, Scott.
Thank you.
You know, I got in trouble for doing the Larry Cable Guy and Jerry Seinfeld on yesterday's show.
With Larry and Jerry?
No, they didn't call. They didn't have a problem. No, I got in trouble because I told my mom that they were on the show, and so it was, she didn't think I was very funny. But anyway, I thought it was fun.
Not nice so to I'll have fool to come, your mother.
No, you do not mess with Mother Nature or any other mother.
Absolutely not.
Well, what about the market? Speaking of messing with stuff.
Yeah, the market was not so great on Wednesday's trade. It was the second day this year, to put it in context, second day this year, now we're already well into April, that we've had a triple-digit down day on the Dow.
Okay, well, let me give you the half full. You're half full, half empty. Half empty, right?
On what?
On everything. Half full, half empty. Half
generally,
empty?
Generally half empty, but pretty sure that things are close to being half full.
Okay, all right. That's good. I'm always half full. I'm always looking for where the silver lining is. I don't necessarily mean just a market. This is kind of a, you know, we're doing a little psychological analysis
we're going
here,
philosophical.
Scott. Yeah. No, but I think that to put it in perspective, 2 days out of what? How many trading days? 85?
Yeah, I think 80 something. Terrific. It didn't bother me a bit.
Okay.
NASDAQ had a pretty soft day Wednesday, down 45. That's a pretty big move for the NASDAQ, but still not that big a deal. And the NASDAQ is so heavily Apple weighted that as Apple goes, the NASDAQ is going to go. And I think we're going to continue to see weakness and volatility there. That trajectory that Apple was on is just not sustainable. So we're going to see some wavering there. And we actually paired our position back Monday.
Okay. Let me ask you this question, because and I'm sure it's something that people are thinking, is that we've seen historically there have been adjustments to change the composition of the Dow.
Yeah.
Have we had that happen with the NASDAQ?
Companies move in and out of there.
Okay.
Sure, yeah.
And so is there any way in which the folks that kind of manage that index, the NASDAQ index, any way for them to change that, to take away some of that, such a huge impact of Apple?
They'd have to completely change the way the index is calculated. You know, really, if you look at it, Apple should be in the Dow because it's the largest market cap out there. But if they put Apple in the Dow, it being a price-weighted index, and Apple at $600,
right?
Yeah, IBM's the next highest price at $200. It would be absolutely dominated by Apple.
But that'd give the bears a 15,000-point Dow.
It sure would, yeah. And then when that stock started coming back to Earth, it would not be pretty. So
that would make it very volatile.
Yeah, but it's important to recognize that these numbers are not, you know, they're not pure numbers. They're pretty easy. They're manipulated and they're impacted by things like Apple and all that stuff. So it's important to take all this stuff into the context of the market in general and each other and all that stuff. S&P down 14 on Wednesday's trade. Oil down $2 on Wednesday's trade. Tens at 223. Here's the big number. Gold down 52.
Wow.
Yeah, gold is just getting slaughtered.
What's happening? Or is it just people are
it's QE?
It's QE, no QE, okay.
It's QE, it's all QE. And, you know, chartists say, I'm not a chartist. We look at trends, but I'm not a
chartist.
You're
more of a fundamental guy.
Yeah, chartists are saying now that even if gold went all the way down to $1,300, it still would be maintaining its uptrend. That's how long gold has been going up.
Well, there's also some wishful thinking there, too. They're trying to talk it into going up.
Yeah, 1600 is, to me, I think, still an elevated level for gold. And the reason I feel bad about gold, we don't own gold. But the reason I feel bad about gold is because so many investors fell so much in love with gold and they went crazy after it. And these things happen every single time. There's a fever of tech stocks or a gold fever or whatever fever. It happens every time. We're going to see this happen with the Apple fever at some point.
Well, and we've seen that happen. And this is why you're right. We have told people, look, you want some gold. We'll make it part of a commodities exposure.
Yeah, don't fall in
love
with it.
Don't load up on it. Same thing with silver.
Yeah, absolutely.
Silver's been on a crazy ride. I'm sure you saw the article in the Wall Street Journal that, you know, it shows it went from 30 to over 50. I mean, that's a 66% gain.
Yeah.
In a matter of months.
Yeah, and is following gold's path of the last couple of days.
Very interesting stuff.
Lots of news today to talk about. ADP National Employment Report, the one that reflects the private sector jobs created in the last month, expecting 200,000 jobs. We got 209,000 jobs.
You happy with that?
Yeah, I am happy with that. Well, I'm happy with it in the context of that we were expecting 200. I would rather see us expect 400 and get 409. But we got 200,000 jobs, 100,000 of which created by companies of 50 employees or less.
I like that a lot.
Yeah,
that's that velocity of money thing.
Yeah.
That's where the money's going to be all changing hands all over the place when you got that many small employers hiring.
Yeah, some things I did not like about the number, mostly service sector jobs. Very, okay. Very heavily weighted towards service sector jobs. Manufacturing jobs only rose 23,000. Construction jobs only 13,000. Financial sector jobs only 8,000.
What are we at? Almost 90%? Almost 90% in our country, service sector, 10% manufacturing?
I don't think it's quite that imbalanced, but Europe is. Europe is almost exclusively service sector at this point.
Wow.
So, yeah, those aren't really the kind of quality jobs we're looking for. They're the kind of jobs that are easy to move in and out. They're volatile jobs. You know, manufacturing jobs have a tendency to be stickier, so I would rather have seen some of those jobs in the manufacturing
Well, maybe the natural
sector.
Gas we've talked about on previous shows, natural gas will bring the cheapness in the United States, will bring more of those manufacturing jobs back here.
Yep, and I'm going to spare you being yelled at by Lisa and not tell you my next story right now.
Well, let's go to a quick break, and we will come right back with Scott's story.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
All right, we're back. Scott, tell us a story.
I'm going to tell you about an interesting story about mortgage in a second, but I have a couple of other just sort of quick data points I want to throw at you. Some bad news from Europe on Wednesday's trade.
To Spain?
Well, I'm going to get to Spain just in a second, right. But they had their version of the PMI came out on Wednesday, and all indications are starting to really show us that Europe is going back into a recession. So the PMI came out for Europe. It basically takes a survey of about 1,000 companies or so and find out how they're doing from month to month. It edged down to 49.1%, 49.1 on the index in March from 49.3 in February. Mm. Anything below the 50 mark shows contraction.
What is that? Is that a...
I'm not saying. I'm not telling you. Also out of Spain, they did an auction, a bond auction, 2.6 billion euros of government bonds on Wednesday's trade. It's a 2020, so it's an 8-year maturity. Average yield 5.3, bid to cover at 3. All bid to cover means is that for every euro they borrowed, there were 3 that were willing to be lent.
That's good. That's encouraging.
Okay. Yeah, it's
the
okay.
rate's a little higher.
Yep, and they didn't. And they sold on the lower end of their target range, meaning they would have liked to have borrowed more money, but only at a lower rate.
I see.
So it's okay.
So that's okay, but that's not good. There are people saying, "Nah, I'm not going to give it to you at the lower rate."
Yeah, there definitely is some concern there.
So there's some bidding up of their yields.
Yeah. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. Mortgage applications are up. U.S. mortgage applications picked up last week. Pretty decent number, up 4.8%. However, refinance makes up 71.2% of applications.
I should have guessed. I was going to say 70%.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
I mean, if we're trying to find reasons to think that there's going to be a bottom in the housing market, refinancing is not going to cause us to bottom in the housing market. So not such great news there. Fixed 30-year mortgages average 4.16%. That's actually down from 4.23% of last week.
So, you know, it's just the continuation of the housing being what it is.
But here's what I want to tell you about housing. Okay. This kind of story kind of aggravated me. I'm not exactly sure why, but you would like to think that mortgage credit standards were maybe loosening a little bit. We're through the crisis. Everybody knows housing is a huge drag on the market. So, the banks aren't making any money. So, lighten up a little bit and get some loans. Average credit score for borrowers in February, 750, up from 740.
It's pretty high.
It's very high, and it's going up. It's telling us that it's making it harder for people to get loans. The average denied loan had a credit score of 699 and a loan-to-value ratio of 83%, meaning people are still putting 20% down.
So why are they saying no?
They're just tightening. There's a company called Ellie Mae, which is a software provider for mortgage lenders. Average borrower going through Fannie and Freddie Mae had a credit score of 770.
Wow.
I mean,
what's the highest you can have is 850, right?
850, but nobody really has that. I mean, a handful of folks do. But conforming loans, which are the ones that Fannie and Freddie are supposed to help with the most, average credit score 764, average down payment of 22%. So coming through this economy that we are coming through, I mean, we're coming through a major, major recession. Housing and jobs are the only two main drags left. Jobs are coming. They're a little slow, but they're coming. Everybody knows we need help from housing. Nobody's helping. Fannie's not helping. The banks aren't helping. Here are people out here with good credit, with 20% down, and they can't get a mortgage.
Good money, ready to spend it. That doesn't make any sense to me. I hear your frustration.
So you share my aggravation.
I do. And I think that my next article I was going to share is bank earnings will be explosive next year.
Yeah, banks, well, they're not having to write anything off, that's for sure.
They're going to be they've tightened to try to boost profit now because they've been given the green light on dividends, and they've been able to buy back stocks if they want. And a lot of these too big to fail, the 15 of the 19 that passed the stress test, there's a lot of expectation, and I think they're just trying to keep it tight.
I think that helps their margins, but it doesn't help their revenue at all. You know what I mean? The more loans, the more revenue. And honestly, a 699 credit score with 20% down, you should be able to get a mortgage on a conforming loan.
Well, you know, these banks, they got the TARP money.
Yeah.
They survived payback time.
Yeah, I guess so. Man, that's really something. Two pieces of corporate news that I think are interesting. Sadly, Yahoo announced Wednesday morning that they are going to cut 14% of their staff. That's a big number. That's 2,000 people. And a lot of it's coming from Silicon Valley, which is a little disheartening for followers of Yahoo because things have been so good in the Valley. You know, this year and last year, too, there's just so much going on there, and so many companies are doing so well.
Where's Apple? Are they there, too?
They are there, yeah.
Well, then they might pick them up.
They might. That's a lot of people, 2,000. So kind of sad news there, especially on the jobs front. A little bit better news, Burger King is getting ready to come public again.
Now, how's that going to work? They're owned by a privately held company. They're just going to do a spin them off and make them a separate company and keep some of the ownership, or what are
they going to
do?
Yeah, they're going to keep, it's a little bit more complicated than that. In this particular case, there's a shell company that a UK-listed investor has, and it's a little bit more complicated. But in essence, yes, they're spinning off a portion of it. The company itself that they're making public will be called Burger King Worldwide. They've gotten rid of that mascot with the great big plastic head.
Why? I liked him.
Well, because they said the only people that it appealed to were 30-year-old men, basically. I'm giving you a couple years.
Thank you, Scott. You're very generous. Well, so what they're saying then is the people that eat there don't like them.
He's not hip enough. He's only bringing in one demographic,
okay,
which is what they don't like. So they're revamping the menu. They're going to have smoothies, salads, snack wraps. They've actually slipped to number three behind Wendy's because they did a lot of revamping on their menu. So that's what's coming up for Burger King. They expect to do that in the next couple months or so.
Well, we'll see what happens. Got anything else for me?
Nope.
All right, well, listen to this. Hey, we want to take a quick break, Lisa? All right, Lisa wants to take a quick break. I don't. I'm going on the record. We'll come right back, and I get to hear this story about a marriage of a couple of the brokerage firms, what's going on there. Talk about Rocky.
All right.
Okay.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
Don't cheat. Scott's right, looking right, at my notes. Right. No, I got a quiz for Scott in just a minute. I said, I'm going to ask you a few questions. He immediately looks over my paper. All right.
It's the Kobayashi Maru.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, you know that.
Huh?
Very good.
Thank you.
You pop culture guy. It's only 50 years old, but you're there. Hey, okay, so listen to this. The Wall Street Journal had an article about kind of a little bit of a rocky, challenging thing for a couple of the big brokerage houses, Morgan Stanley and Smith Barney. They've got this merger deal, basically joint venture where, who is it? One of them is buying the other one out over. Morgan Stanley is buying Smith Barney, I think, from Citigroup.
Smith Barney has been passed around, but yeah, they're going to Morgan Stanley now.
Ouch. Well, they're having some challenges with the merger, I guess, and making it jive and work. And they the revenue's down $1.5 billion. And they've lost 2,700 brokers, either through attrition or let them go. And 241 offices are gone.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Well, that old wirehouse model just doesn't seem to really work anymore. You know, the
a lot of people have gone the independent route.
Yeah, the seminars and all that stuff. It just doesn't really work. The public has lost so much faith in the Merrills and the Smith Barneys and the Morgan Stanleys of the world. And these culture things never seem to work. Merrill Lynch is not meshing with Bank America. When I was at Schwab, they bought Northern Trust.
Oh, man.
And it wasn't Northern Trust. It was U.S. Trust. U.S. Trust.
Yeah,
they bought U.S.
Yeah,
Trust.
Yeah,
that was a disaster. They sold it 8 years later. Those things never seem to work out.
Well, it's not just a culture that's a challenge. It's the technologies. And a big challenge that Wall Street Journal talks about is Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney really having a hard time integrating their technologies. Lisa said, really? She turned around and looked. Lisa sits with her back to us the whole time, ladies and gentlemen. But I said technology, and she turned around.
But you can't underestimate the technology because that's the entire
huge
client database. It's the communication systems. It's the research analyst systems. It's all that stuff.
Well, it's a challenge a lot. And assets under management down $92 billion.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So there, you know, I think you've hit it, though, on the head. A lot of investors are just looking for complete independence.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking. I had a couple that came in here recently, and they're just looking for an independent advisor, and they've been managing it themselves. And they said, you know, we want somebody independent. We want somebody to manage it and tell me how you can help us.
You don't want somebody selling bonds to you out of their own inventory.
That's just, well, if it's so good, why are you selling it to me?
There's just all kinds of things wrong.
That's just always, and I wrote about that in my book. You know that.
Yeah.
I know you read that section. Before we let you were here when you came on board right before the book got released. And I said, okay, Scott, in addition to being on the radio show, I need you to take a quick look at my book I'm about to publish and just read the investment section for me. But it was in there, and that's one of the things we talk about is that just seems to be, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. All right, so here's the quiz for Scott. It's not really a quiz. It's kind of fun, though. Where are they now? These are all the executives from all the nonsense that went on in the 2000s.
All right.
Okay. So you already saw the first one. Dennis
Kozlowski.
Kozlowski.
Former CEO of Tyco. He of the famous birthday party that had the gold-painted Roman gladiators. And he's wearing an orange jumpsuit.
He is. He is. He's going to be serving somewhere between 8 and 25 years.
Yeah, he's up north somewhere.
Yeah, he is. Where is he? He's in a fancy place, minimum security prison in Manhattan.
Yeah, he got in trouble because, you know, this is how just ridiculous some of these guys get. He was buying art and not paying tax on it. That was really what brought him down. That's what they sent him away for. Now, that's not the only thing he did wrong, but that's what really got him because he was too greedy to pay the tax on his art.
Some of these guys get to a level where they feel like they become untouchable.
Yeah. Now, he came up from the very bottom of Tyco. So, you know, it wasn't like it was handed to him by any means.
And what is Tyco? What's going on with Tyco?
Well, Tyco at one point owned like 27 different companies. They had everything you could think of. It was just the wackiest conglomeration of things.
Are they still around?
Yeah, they're still around. Yeah, they're based in Bermuda.
Okay. Well, here's the next one. Martha Stewart.
Yeah, boy, we'll talk about a resurrection. Now she's got, now people are fighting over her products because, you know, she wants to put them basically in every store. And every store says, well, I thought we had a deal. But
right.
But yeah, she served a little bit of time for insider trading, information she wasn't supposed to have. But
5 months of prison sentence, and then she got to wear the ankle thing. Remember the ankle thing?
Yeah.
And they were talking about making it into like a, you know, a new fashion accessory.
Yeah. But she's back. Didn't seem to miss a beat.
$258 million market cap. That's not too shabby.
Not at all.
So Lisa's commenting behind the scenes about her. Did you say a billionaire? First person, according to Lisa, that's my source. I'm sticking to it. First person become a billionaire in prison. I believe that.
I believe it.
Here's another favorite of Scott's, Raj.
Rajaratnam. Is he gone yet?
He's. I think they've done a good enough job of saying he's about to die.
Well, that's right.
That they've got him into the federal medical center in Devens, Massachusetts. Devens and Ayer, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I know exactly where that is. Well, you know, he was one of the Wall Street's just number one top guys. Had the Galleon Group hedge fund and another insider trading guy.
Who was securities fraud, conspiracy, 11 years.
He was getting his inside information from a board member. Who knows better than a board member? Procter & Gamble guy, they'd have a meeting and he'd call and say, hey, I heard the earnings weren't going to be so good. And then the next thing, they'd short the stock. It was just ridiculous.
Some of the nonsense that goes on, I can't even go there. Are we up against another break, Lisa? Lisa, we got a couple more. All right, real quick, Lisa. Jeffrey Skilling.
Oh yeah, Enron. He's still away. He'll be away for a while.
He's a former CEO.
Yeah, okay. He's the guy that was screaming at analysts and telling what a bunch of idiots they were.
He's serving a 24-year sentence at a federal correction. It doesn't sound like that's a light one.
No, he's not doing a light one.
And his new bunkmate is Rod Blankovich. The governor?
Oh, Blagojevich, yeah.
Yeah, I can't ever pronounce that.
Yeah, they'll have a terrific time. Well, Ken Lay is dead. He was the chairman.
Yeah.
As Skilling. And then the other guy was Andy Fastow.
He's on the list. You know where he is now?
He's like an accountant somewhere.
Yeah,
he's a
close. Very somewhere. Good, Scott. Scott knows what's going on in the world, ladies and gentlemen. He's a document review clerk.
Yeah.
In a law firm in Houston.
He was the one that invented all these off-balance sheet properties where they were hiding loans, and he owned half of them himself. That whole thing was how analyst community didn't shut that thing down 2 years before it happened is a mystery.
Well, he did insider trading, fraud, and he was had a six-year term, and he just got out, I guess, not too long ago. Of course, everybody knows the Bernie Madoff story.
Yeah.
150-year prison sentence. He'll die in prison.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any chance of him getting out.
No, there's no way he'll get out.
Here's one I didn't recognize right away. Joseph Nakio. He serving a 6-year term, Quest Communications.
Oh yeah,
CEO, insider trading.
It was with his son, right? He and his son.
Yeah. Anyway, he's still there. Correctional Institute. Anyway, okay. Who else we got? Bernie Ebers.
Bernie Health South. WorldCom.
He's got a 25-year sentence. He's still there, convicted of conspiracy, securities fraud, filing false documents with regulators. You know, they really get mad when you falsify the documents. But it was an $11 billion fraud with his company.
Yeah, that's a lot of fraud.
You already did Andrew Fastow, and then Sam Waxall, Cadman Pharmaceuticals. Let's see. He was involved. Who was he involved with? Yeah, I'm Clone. I think he was. Yeah, he was the one that was involved with the deal with Martha Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I take it for what it is, ladies and gentlemen. Some of the ones that get in trouble, they live to fight another day. Some of them are still living the life and living the vita loca in prison. And that's probably where some of them will be for a long time.
Rightfully
so. We'll be right back.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
That's a load of bull.
All right, we're back, and I do have a load of bull for you. Actually, I mentioned this on yesterday's show, and I promised to get to it, so here I am. Pushed Scott out of here and said, go get to work, Scott. I've got a story and word of caution and a load of bull to talk about. The load of bull is what is called an unlisted, delisted, non-traded REIT. Isn't that confusing? All right. First, let's break this down a little bit. A REIT is a real estate investment trust. It's basically in a type of investment where multiple investors pool their money. They're solicited by the folks that run this real estate trust. They get the investor money and they buy properties and then they rent them out to businesses, restaurants, all kinds of, a lot of commercial property, and they collect the rent. They take a little off the top, and then what's supposed to be left over goes to the people that put their money in, the REIT holder. And so you get units or interest in the REIT. Well, the problem is that some of them have no market. There's no market value for them. And so people have been sold REITs. They are securities. They're sold by a registered rep, a stockbroker, somebody who is affiliated with a broker-dealer. And you've got a couple things going on here. It's an investment. So it's a security. Anytime anything is a security, part of the definition of a security is, guess what? It's at risk. But very often they are presented as being safer, and it's supposed to be for income. Well, the problem is that they can be very illiquid, and people don't always understand that. And so I came across a story of a lady. It was in investment news, and she says, did not do a very good job of helping understand the limitations of a REIT. So I'm going to do that for all of you. A REIT can be part of an overall portfolio. It can be a good diversification because you've got real estate in the portfolio. I highly recommend you only do that this way. You deal only with publicly traded REITs that are listed on an exchange where there's a market for it. People can buy and sell them. If you're doing what's called a delisted, unlisted, non-traded REIT, that means you have to go back to the company that operates the REIT to get your money redeemed. You say, well, I've got $20,000 in this REIT and I need to get my money back. And if you have to go back to the company, they can say, nope, we're not going to buy it back. That's it. Unless you can find somebody else to buy it, and that's very hard to do. Now, they're sold for income because they're supposed to produce income. And there have been times, to be fair, that they have produced good income and can produce good returns, but they can lose money. The lady in the story that caught my eye, she had lost like 60 or 70% of her money on one of these things. Did you hear that? 70% of her money gone. So here's the deal. Only buy them if they're publicly traded. And better yet, don't buy one. Buy a mutual fund or an ETF that holds a whole bunch of them. Now you've got diversification. Now you've got liquidity. Now you've got the elimination of not having any liquidity, because if you buy one, I've had clients, and this is part of why I wanted to talk about it with you today, is that I've had clients who come to me, we've done our analysis, we've done our recommendations, and guess what I've got to work around? I've got to work around this albatross in their account that we can't sell. We call the company for them, and you got to get in line. You go into a queue for redemptions of your money to get money out of the REIT, and we've seen that go on forever. I've got some that never got their money back, and I've got some that took quite a while, and it's like, okay, how am I going to, where I've got to work around that as their investment advisor. So just be very careful, and you follow the money. There, I found a law firm that is suing brokers over selling some of these illiquid REITs. The White Securities Law firm called the White Law Group, and they're in South Florida. And they said, many cases, and notwithstanding the risk of the REIT, broker-dealers market the investments as safe and secure. Well, I can see that. And the REITs typically pay the broker a high commission. The folks trying to sell the REIT that have the REIT have to pay the broker to do that, and it's upwards of 15% commission. So there's a pretty strong incentive for them to sell it. So be careful with the REIT. Deal with publicly traded, and better yet, mutual funds or ETFs that are owning the REIT. All right, we're out of time. See you next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.